Hello and welcome to the British Equestrian Podcast. Sadly, we are nearing the end of Female Health February. It's been a brilliant month. We've loved all the feedback we're getting. It's been so interesting. I've learned so much, which is excellent, and I hope everyone listening has as well. But before we wrap up, there is one big topic still left to cover, and that is how we can best fuel our bodies for health and performance. And we're going to look at some of the sort of maybe slightly thorny physical and mental issues that can be linked with poor nutrition. To talk about this all in more detail, I am joined by three leading experts from our National Lottery-funded world-class programme. First up, we've got Dr. George Wilson, who is based at Liverpool John Moores University, where he studies exercise physiology and sports nutrition, and he is the world-class programme's performance nutritionist. One of his key areas of interest is the health and well-being of jockeys, which has resulted in 15 peer-reviewed publications. Welcome, George.
Yeah, well, good morning, everybody. Thanks for having me on.
Next up, we've got Lainey Lightfoot, and she is the world-class program's performance psychologist. She's been with us since 2016 and is the co-lead for the Perform Well Mental Wellbeing program. She's a BASES accredited sports scientist and has a master's degree in sports psychology. Welcome, Lainey.
Thank you, Rachel. Really pleased to be here discussing these important topics today.
And last but not least, you've already heard from her several times this month, but she is back again to talk to us, is Dr. Anna Louise McKinnon, who is the Chief Medical Officer for the World Class Programme and the Clinical Director for the Injured Jockeys Fund, which she does alongside working for the NHS. And she's previously supported other sports through her links to the UK Sports Institute. Welcome back, Anna Louise.
Morning. Nice to be here. Thank you.
So let's dive straight into this then. If we're talking about a nutritionally balanced diet for the female body, what are we actually talking about? What does that mean?
Let me pick up on this. We've done quite a lot of research with female jockeys. So we're going from making a link to equestrian sports. We've actually published quite a bit on female jockeys. We need more. But basically what we found is that jockeys pretty much don't really fuel themselves correctly because weight being the biggest concern throughout their career. So the thing that will consume their whole day is making weight. And what we have to do, Rachel, is we have to get away from this myth that you have to starve. And obviously a lot of dehydration is used within racing, which Anna Louise will tell you as well, all the downsides of that from the medical side of it, what that can cause. But just sticking with nutrition, the idea that you associate not eating with losing weight is a myth that we have to dispel. Because as I've said before, it's all about energy balance. So if you're consuming 5, 6, 7, 10 feeds a day, and the total accumulation energy-wise of those feeds still adds up to less than what you expend, you will have to lose weight or maintain a lower body weight. And this is something that we have to get across, because this is the crux of everything. So the last point I'll make on this, and it's a very simple thing, is that people associate small feeds or small portions with maintaining weight or being the best thing for your diet. Now, if you eat 5 small Mars bars, okay, they are very energy dense. There are other confectionery out there, I'm not just plugging Mars bars, but the energy, they're so energy dense. So all will happen is you'll get a very, very large amount of energy in a very, very small volume of food. All that can happen with that is you're going to get a high blood sugar, a rebound hypoglycemia, you're going to store it as fat, and you're going to feel hungry again. Whereas you could have a plate full of natural food, salads and vegetables, that would fill your table plate overflowing, and it would still be less calories within that food. And you could have that throughout the day. It's going to break down slower. It's going to be more fiber in it. It's going to feed you better, et cetera, et cetera. So we have to get away from this concept, this idea that not eating is the way to lose weight. It's about what you eat and when you eat.
And I think, yeah, that's a really good point. And so in that respect, then, what should we kind of be looking for in a plate of food? If you're looking to put together, a nice dinner or a lunch or whatever, what should kind of be on that plate in terms of maybe the food groups or proportions of food groups on that plate?
Very simple. If it grows on a tree, grows on the ground, or you can catch it, eat it. If that's your food is made up of those three, if that is your mantra, you follow that, you eat a rainbow, you're eating food that's natural, you are going to be as healthy, pardon the expression, as a horse. And you will be. You don't, because the problem is that the food industry has hijacked this. We're all fads and fashions and fad and all these myths about diets. That is, every diet works because most diets put you in an energy deficit. But what you need to do is get back to what nature intends. And if you do that, you'll be healthy as a horse. So give you an example. If you get up in the morning and you're having some berries and some, you know, for your breakfast, and mid-morning you're having, again, you know, something natural like eggs or something like that, which you can catch in that, and you're having, then you're having, you know, some fish or chicken and some vegetables and salad for your lunch, mid-afternoon, similar, just something like fruit or whatever. And then of an evening, a similar again, vegetables and lean meats, and then maybe some milk before you went to bed. You bet six times a day, you weight will be fantastic, and you'll fuel yourself, and you get all your micronutrients as well. So you've got all your minerals and vitamins. It's just, there really is. It's very, very simple, you know.
Perfect. You make it sound so simple. Everyone's going to be going to the shopping shops now.
No, the last point I make is why it's not simple is because the food industry's made food addictive. So you see a mum pushing a child down the street in a pram and the baby's screaming. The first thing the mum does is sticks a load of fruit juice or some kind of sweets into its mouth to shut it up. And the reason you do that is because we know there's a neurological effect of sugar that makes you feel good for a very small period of time. It's actually nutritionally no good to you, and you're only going to store it as fat. So we need to get back to what nature intended.
Yeah, and I think there's something there that you touched on, again, going back to the sugar, the burst of energy and the kind of the crashing that comes with it. What are some of the kind of maybe the mental and physical consequences of not fueling our bodies properly, kind of in addition to what you've just mentioned there?
Yeah, I'll pick up on this. So it depends really whether we're talking about a prolonged period of time or a short period of time. Obviously, as George has mentioned, sugar might give you a high for a short period of time, but then there's going to be the subsequent crash afterwards. So avoiding those foods that immediately gratify you, I suppose, is something that you might want to consider. Over a prolonged period of time, problematic underfueling does lead to, as it sounds, problems. And that can be a variety of problems, from problems with our bone health, to our immune function, to the way our heart works, to hormones in our bodies, and also our mental health. So there's a whole variety of systems that will get affected by underfueling for either a very prolonged period of time or very severe underfueling. And that's something that certainly at the elite level we worry about. And we also worry about, the teenagers coming into our sports. And Lainey will pick up on some of this because this leads so much into the mental health side of things as well. So that's what we want to get away from. And I mean, if you follow George's advice, you know, ideally we'll never run into problems at all, because if we start at a nice low level with kids having a good healthy diet where they come into the sport, they won't want to reach for all those foods that are going to give them the quick highs, and we won't have these issues. But Lainey might want to pick up on some of the mental health side of things.
Yeah, I think even before we move into mental health, I'd say it's some of the more psychological consequences of not fueling correctly. We can see problems with things like memory recall. So for riders that's doing that consistently, we might be seeing things like people forgetting their tests because, the brain isn't fueled correctly. Or we see challenges with concentration. So on the one hand, that's going to impact training and not getting the best out of training. At a more extreme level, you know, that's getting distracted and maybe more likely to have falls and that sort of thing. So yeah, lots of mental consequences to be aware of as well.
Yeah, definitely ones that can really impact you in the saddle. As you say, if you're out competing and you forget your test or you get lost on the course, that's your day over and done with. It's not ideal. I think something that comes up a lot of the time that we hear about in a question support is the sort of maybe under eating, and there are various reasons for it, and sometimes you don't even realize you're doing it. I mean, I'm guilty of this myself. I'll go to the yard in the morning at the weekend and I've had a sort of a cereal bar and an apple, and 3 o'clock comes around and I realize I've not eaten for the rest of the day. Why is that maybe something we see in this sport?
Yeah, see that. Sorry, I was going to say you see that across all equestrian sports. It's very, very relevant within racing because the day is consumed by the welfare of the horse and the athletes, and they are athletes, even stable staff are athletes, because they're doing it as a profession. That's their job, to ride horses and to look after horses. So in that context, they just don't see themselves as the focus of where the attention should be, including their own. And that can also be from the trainers and the people who employ them. It's all about the horse. And it's only recently in the last 20, 25 years that we've actually started looking at athlete welfare, i.e. the people who actually ride the horses. They were a second thought, or they weren't even a thought. But if you're not fueling properly throughout the day and you're just getting these very fast, as you said, a cereal bar here, a grab a bar of chocolate here, a sausage roll here, then again, you're going to get obviously very fast sugar rises, and then you're going to be hungry within a very, very short space of time. And the problem with that is, obviously, we've already mentioned about concentration and cognitive function and things like that. But if you take it back a step, if you think about it from a competition point of view and a performance point of view, the actual most important day is the day before performance, because we need to fill glycogen stores. And just briefly, glycogen is stored from carbohydrates. It's the body's preferred source of fuel. And you store it in your muscles, and you have hepatic glucose stored in your liver. So if those stores aren't full, the day of competition, which is the next day, you're going to be underfueled. If your previous day, because it takes about 24 to 36 hours to fill your glycogen stores, to convert the carbs into glycogen. So if you're competing on the Saturday and you don't fuel right on the Friday, you potentially, with all those pre-competition nerves on the Saturday, and you're rushing around you've got no time at all, then you actually will really, really properly be doing yourself a disservice. So these are the key messages that we need to get across to athletes. Just like in professional football or any other sport, the day before is so important. And then you probably may get away with it on the day when you're very, very nervous. So there's those things to consider as well, Rachel.
I guess it's a bit like remembering to charge your phone before you go out or whatever for the day. This is essentially...
Or fill your car if you're driving from Liverpool to London.
Exactly. It's all about putting that fuel in the tank so that when you need it, it's there and it's ready to be utilised.
Yeah, but I think what's interesting there is that, you know, equestrian athletes tend to be so busy. If they know they're going away for competition, what they'll be doing before that is cramming in loads of extra stuff that they know they're not going to do when they're being away at competition. So that's why it highlights the importance of, you know, planning this stuff in and being really like doing it on purpose, being purposeful with planning meal times in and when you're going to eat and not just relying on hunger cues. Because otherwise, like you say, it gets to 3 o'clock and then they realise, oh, I haven't eaten, I'm feeling a bit faint, I wonder why.
Hmm. Well, that leads me on nicely, because my next question was going to be, what are some kind of simple strategies or some food options that you can keep in the lorry or, you know, at the yard that people can use to make sure that they are eating as they should be, making sure that body is fueled and ready for when they need to perform?
Protein satiates the appetite really well. So I send all the athletes, since I've been doing the job at the BEF, send them all the protein menus for making their own. So things like, chai seed, protein, whey protein powder, chai seeds, and get some natural peanut butter. I mean, so easy to make with a few rolled oats. And you got some carbs, you've got some protein, you've got some healthy fat. They're really, really nice. And you can just have them in a little plastic container and pick away to your heart's content. And they'll feed you throughout the morning and throughout the afternoon. And the feedback has been, this is just great, rather than spending £5 in a service station on something which is rubbish.
And I guess, Lainey, you mentioned there about having sort of, you know, some strategies in place to make sure that you're eating and not just when you're hungry. What are some maybe examples of those?
I think it's just when, you know, typically the riders will be planning out what the day looks like in terms of what I'm doing with the horses. It's like George said before, it's making sure that planning includes you as well. So, you know, writing down this is when I'm going to eat, being aware that, you know, you might be feeling nervous, you might not feel like eating, but actually it's going to be really important to do so. So having conversations and doing some work beforehand as well to work out when I do feel nervous, what sorts of foods can I tolerate? If I'm feeling a bit sick, for example. But I think, yeah, it's all down to the planning and being really specific with this is when I'm going to do it. And even sometimes as well, it's having people around you in your support team reminding you and encouraging you to do it.
Yeah, definitely. And if that's making sure that they've got those little snacks in their pocket or whatever and can go, right, go eat now.
Yep.
Definitely. Well, I mean, this is the thing with all of this is we're all, as horse owners, so focused on our horses and making sure that our horses are getting the right balance and getting the right feeds and the right supplements in the right quantities and you know, their weight is good. We've got to keep coming back to ourselves. And again, it's something that has come up so many times across this whole month is we spend so much time focusing on our horses. We need to put the same amount of concentration and care into our own bodies and our own sort of processes that we, you know, we can perform as well as we want our horses to. It's a team sport after all. It's, you know, it's not just all about one or the other. That both parts of the engine have got to work as effectively as they can in order to get the results, regardless of whether you are competing at the highest level or you're just going to your local, you know, riding club show at the weekend or whatever. Okay, well, you know, we've talked there about some really positive sides of this and some really good ideas and some helpful strategies for people. But as I touched on at the beginning, there are some thornier issues around this topic. And I think one of them is probably one of the key ones is disordered eating or sort of eating disorders, as some people might know them. What are some of the signs and maybe some indicators that we're slipping into unhelpful habits with our nutrition and heading towards a problem, or someone you know is heading in that direction? Maybe this is one for you, Lainey.
Yeah, I think it can be helpful to think of eating behaviours and thoughts about eating as a continuum, which we are all going to move up and down at times throughout our life. And at one kind of extreme of that continuum, you've got healthy attitudes and behaviours towards food. So that would be things like maintaining a healthy weight, having healthy eating and exercise habits, having body acceptance, taking self-worth from lots of different sources and other sources than what I look like and what I weigh. And then at the other extreme of that continuum, you've got clinical eating disorders. So those would be things like anorexia nervosa, bulimia nervosa. So things that, you know, don't just compromise performance, things that compromise health can compromise life at their most extreme forms. And then in between that, you've got this kind of area of what we call disordered eating, which, again, a lot of us will kind of fall into at certain times in life. So if you think about, you know, when there's a holiday on the horizon and people are thinking about getting into swimsuits, we maybe start changing some behaviours and fall into this area of disordered eating, where we'll see things like maybe weight or shape preoccupation. We'll see people starting to restrict eating, we might see excessive exercise behaviours, cutting out particular food groups to avoid guilt. I think for me, the thing that it's important to look at is what are the kind of beliefs that are underpinning these behaviours? Is it something that's just a bit of a short term because there's something around the corner? Or are we doing this to manage concerns that we've got about our body? Is it that we're going to start becoming really anxious if we can't achieve a certain body shape or weight? Because those things would potentially be red flags and precursors that we might be moving toward that more kind of clinical end of the spectrum.
And what, I mean, we sort of touched on it earlier with the undernutrition and not fueling our bodies correctly, but what are some of the problems then, if people are heading in this direction, have got some of these issues? Obviously there's very much a mental side of things, which you've discussed there, but there must also be some physical consequences as well.
Yeah, so as I mentioned earlier, there's a variety of physical consequences, and almost if you think about each body system, there are consequences arising within every body system. So one of the things that the early researchers looked at was things like bone health and bone mineral density. Over a prolonged period of time, people can become osteoporotic or osteopenic, which means that they have poor bone quality, and they are more likely to fracture. And that's a, you know, big problem within jockeys that we've looked at. But, you know, within professional athletes as a whole, people who underfuel over a prolonged period of time or have eating disorders, this is a problem. You might start to notice people getting lots of coughs and colds, niggles, aches and pains, injuries, and just picking up injuries quickly. That's because their immune function is not working very well. They don't respond well or in the normal way to training. So instead of, you know, increasing muscle mass and getting stronger muscles and actually improving with exercise, they just don't adapt in the same way because they haven't got the right nutrients around to make the most of it. Cardiac function is affected. Brain function is affected. Even bladder and bowel function is massively affected. So if you think of a body system, one way or another, underfueling and eating disorders are going to affect it.
Definitely. And I imagine, well, one of the things we sort of touched on before we actually hit record on this was around the language that we're using around food and around nutrition and all this kind of thing. That must be something that we have to be very considerate of, regardless of whether we're talking about people with eating disorders or just in general, because I guess that could be almost a tipping point into something like this.
I think it's really, really important that we're careful around that, particularly in the teenage group. Teenage girls are particularly susceptible. Coaches, because they're in that, you know, they're respected and they're looked up to by these athletes and people learning to ride. They've got to be so careful about what they say, even, you know, around food, around meal times. It's almost a no-go area at the moment. You just need to put the right foods around, but then maybe say no more. So I think if we at training or at competitions, at venues, if we can have the right sort of foods available, then people will hopefully make the right choices. And that's probably a better way to deal with it rather than actually being quite pointed about what people should be eating and how they should eat.
It's a really important word there, that, you know, should, because what should often does with individuals, it creates this expectation. And then if we don't live up to that expectation often then what we start doing is kind of beating ourselves up for not having lived up to an expectation. So absolutely agree that it's an area we need to be super careful. We need to be super careful with our language. We know that in particular through the teenage years, athletes, individuals are going to be very, very susceptible to comments about food, eating, body shape, body size. And I also think we have to be careful just about the narrative around food. A lot of people pick up some of their nutritional advice from not particularly helpful sources. And then we start listing foods as good or bad. And again, I think any time we're getting rigid in our thinking about something being good or bad and not kind of looking at those shades of grey in the middle, it's probably not particularly helpful. So I think starting to challenge some of those unhelpful beliefs that we might be picking up in people around food as well, like, you know, this need to sometimes earn food, like I've got to work out first before I earn the food. And George made a really useful point before that actually it's thinking about that you got to fuel it the day before. It's not about working hard and then earning the right to eat. You've got to fuel it before you've done it.
And also on that point, I think what's really, really important, because some really interesting points raised there that are obviously very valid to health, because athlete welfare is the reason why I do all the research I do. And the reason why I love doing the job at the BEF, because I'm interested in athlete welfare. So we're looking at it from an athlete welfare point of view. First and foremost, we have to make sure that people understand, as Anna Louise mentioned, some of the issues that come with underfueling or incorrect fueling, that there's going to be a consequences for that, having a dietary regime which is inadequate for what you're trying to do. So obviously we mentioned bone density, and there's another side issues of that. That rather than lacks an osteogenic stimulus. In other words, they're not pounding the floor all the time, so maybe the bones aren't as healthy, but certainly nutrition would be a massive part of that, obviously. But what I would say is it's coming across to the athletes and having them understand, look, you need a certain amount of body fat. You can't lose weight forever. You need to fuel you for these reasons. And a very simple example would be in the discipline, something like dressage. So where the margin for error is so small between winning and losing, if you are underfueled or you have incorrect fuel or the sugars you've been taking at all, more energy dense foods, and you're going to get these rebound hypoglycemias, sugars bouncing up and down, your concentration levels are going to be affected. So you could actually be throwing the whole competition away by getting your nutrition strategies wrong just before you climb on. So you need to understand that there's going to be, not just from a health point of view, but from a performance point of view, a downside. Go back to the health side of things. things. Then there's the obviously the chronic situation where if you are constantly underfueling, again, as Anna Louise mentioned, there are all the obviously things like even like cardiac problems and all these things, and you can lose muscle mass and catabolism and breakdown of muscle mass. So there's lots and lots of downsides. But obviously, people aren't scientists, and we need to explain this in very, very simple terms that you need to do this because if you don't, this potentially could happen. But as again, Lainey said, the last point I'll make on this is that don't beat yourself up. As I say to all athletes, if you want to go and have a Chinese takeaway, go and have one. If you want to have a Mars bar, go and have one. It's a battle you're not going to win. You're going to have a war with yourself. And again, that's more the psychological side of things. But as long as most of the time you look after your diet and follow the it grows on a tree, grows in the ground, catch it, eat it mantra, you're going to be fine and you feel properly. But don't beat yourself up if you go and have a bar of chocolate.
I guess that's because that's the thing as well is obviously, you know, we want to promote these healthy strategies, but you can almost get too fixated on them as well. Like, you know, that point about, you know, sometimes give yourself a break, go and have that Chinese must actually be quite a positive thing mentally as well as physically in a way.
Yeah, I mean, again, with the jockeys, I say to the jockeys, and with a lot of them, they say, I need a cheat day. They call it a cheat day. So if that's their way of dealing with it, that's their day of rest, that's their day where they think, I'm not a jockey today, I'm going to let my hair down, and I'm going to do what I want, and I'm going to have a couple of pints, and I'm going to go and have an Indian takeaway, or I'm going to have a Chinese or a full English. Good, go and do it. Enjoy yourself. But what I'm saying is, for your profession and as an athlete, 99% of the time or most of the time, you're going to have to try and fuel yourself correctly for what you're trying to do. And with weight being such an important factor within the horse racing industry, I mean, we could argue in other equestrian sports it's important, but that's for a whole different day. But it's about fueling yourself correctly for what you're trying to do. But again, on the flip side, and I don't know what the colleagues on the call think of it, but my take is, look, don't beat yourself up about it. Go and take your hair down now and again.
Yeah, I'd agree entirely with that.
Yeah, and I was just going to add in there, I think that's so important because particularly if you think about athletes at the elite end of the spectrum, one of the challenges that we have is some of those psychological characteristics and behaviours associated with kind of an elite athlete. So, you know, things like being highly committed, striving for excellence, pushing through pain in training can kind of tip over slightly and become features that make someone, you know, a real prime candidate for an eating disorder. So things like, you know, being highly committed, then if I become highly committed to my diet and I start, you know, following it to the letter and getting almost obsessed with it, this idea of perfectionism. So like George says, it's absolutely fine to have these cheat days or these moments, but if we've got perfectionist tendencies, it's about eating like this all the time, becoming overly rigid. So we do see some of those characteristics that make people being a great athlete can also actually make them a great candidate for an eating disorder as well.
Yeah, definitely. And those are characteristics that you don't even have to be an athlete to have. We can all have it within our, you know, it might be within our professional careers or whatever. And as you say, that can then tip over into things like what we're fueling our bodies with. And then you're posed to have a problem. So it's, you know, it's something we all have to consider, regardless of whether we're competing at the Olympics or, you know, or at a lower level. It's definitely something we all need to consider, as is, you know, everything we've talked about today, definitely. As we kind of wrap up towards the end of this, does anyone have a kind of anything that they particularly want to flag, any take home messages that maybe we haven't talked about yet on this subject?
The only thing that I would add to the things, the topics that we've touched upon for the audience that we're targeted today on the call is that the messages are not just aimed at, you know, any particular discipline. The messages about healthy food are universal to every human being on the planet. And that's, no matter whether you're an athlete or you're not an athlete or whatever you do, if you do not fuel yourself correctly, you're going to run into problems. And we have to try and get some kind of education or break away from the lifestyle that we have to have three meals a day. Well, that was all developed from working in the factories or working in the fields when the landed gentry ran it, because that was the break to feed you. Let's get back to what nature intends you to do. Your nature intends you to be fueled 24/7, 365, even when you're asleep, by glucose to your brain. So if we go back to that, controlling our blood sugar, for instance, and having the right types of fuel, then we're going to be healthier and happier people. And again, I go back to that whole mantra of eating naturally, eating a rainbow. You know, nature provides for us, and we have to get back to that, if not just from an athlete point of view, but from the health of the population at large, because that's the issue, that everything is, seems to be upside down and on its head. We need to get back to a natural approach to eating food and food intake, per se.
No, that was great. Thank you. Does anyone else have anything they want to throw in at the last minute?
Yeah, I think for me, it's to highlight that body image concerns are really common in the general population. So even take equestrian out of the equation at the moment. Body image concerns are really prevalent, and often some of that is exacerbated at the moment by things like social media. You know, we are comparing ourselves to unrealistic ideals and then feeling bad about not being able to get there. So I think it's really important that, again, that we're kind of pushing the narrative about that a little bit as well, that some of what people are aspiring to is either not real in the first place or it's not sustainable. And then that links into the, again, something I pick up regularly in the riders that I work with. We've got this, we find ourselves kind of looking sideways and comparing to other people. So we're drawn to compare to other people. And that's rarely helpful. And I work with a lot of individuals about rather like recognizing when we're looking sideways and comparing and then feeling bad about ourselves. Can we get into the habit of looking in the mirror instead? And what I mean by that is deciding how you want to be. And when I say how you want to be there, I'm not talking about like body shape, size, weight. I'm talking about what sort of person do you want to be? What are the values that are really important to you? And comparing yourself against that. And I would hope for most people that one of those values is actually, I want to be healthy. I want to be committed, hardworking, but I want to be healthy and I want to be happy. And I think the other thing I would flag there is just to be aware of what are some of our kind of underlying beliefs around food and around performance. And I think we really need to be challenging some of the unhelpful beliefs that like there's this ideal shape and size and body weight for optimal performance, because that's absolutely not the case. And people come in all different shapes and sizes, and people can be very successful at all different shapes and sizes. So for me, that just that focus on health, like overall health, is really important.
Yeah, no, that's a very powerful point, I think, there, particularly around, as you say, everyone's different at the end of the day. We're all different shapes and sizes, and we all do different things with our horses, and we all work differently, and we all have very different lifestyles. So it's about finding the strategies that work for you and give you the outcome that you need and keep you, most importantly, out of all of this, happy. That's what we're aiming for at the end of the day, is we want to be happy and enjoy what we're doing.
Yeah, absolutely. And one more thing just to throw in at the end there, Rachel, is can we start to focus, rather than just focusing on what our body looks like or how much, you know, what's the number attached on the scales, can we start to focus on really celebrating what we can do with our bodies? Because actually, you know, watching what equestrian athletes can do with their bodies and the influence that they can have on the horse and that partnership is really something to be celebrated. And we go down an unhelpful rabbit hole of judging ourselves on what we look like in appearance. Can we celebrate other things? Like I said before, that values-led approach, or actually what we can do with our bodies, because that's quite impressive.
Definitely. That's been really helpful, everyone. Thank you so much. It's been another very interesting conversation. I've really enjoyed doing this series actually this month. It's been so fascinating to delve into these different topics and learn a lot more and come away with some actual practical strategies as well as a lot of useful information. For everyone listening at home, if you'd like to find out more about this topic, we're going to put some more resources on the website, britishequestrian.org.uk. Everything that we've covered in Female Health February is there. There's all the podcast episodes, but you can also find those on whatever podcast platform that you use, wherever you found this one, to be honest. There's also sort of some graphics and things for social media, and also a list of resources as there as well that can take you off if you want to find out more about some of the things we've talked about. Obviously, you know, we've only got so much time, we have to sort of do a fairly light approach, but if you'd like to delve into anything else there, we'll put some links there as well to help you do that. Please make sure, you know, tell us how much you've been enjoying this month. If you know any feedback, we'd love to hear it. Obviously, go on social media. There's a lot of stuff on social media. So comment, share it with your friends. If you find it useful, hopefully they will as well. And yeah, we hope to catch up with you all soon. Thank you to George, to Lainey, and to Anna Louise as well. I hope you've also enjoyed coming along here and then sharing some of your wisdom with us. Thank you everyone for listening.